I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about the best in Indiana books. This Saturday is the annual Indiana Authors Awards Dinner, at which the Indianapolis Public Library Foundation and the Glick Foundation will recognize and honor the work of a National Author Award winner, a Regional Author Award winner, and an Emerging Author Award winner. My guest today will be Regional Award winner James Madison, Laura Wills of the Indianapolis Public Library Foundation, and Flory Benford Kichler, one of the judges. Please join the conversation by calling 1-866-476-3881, emailing nolimits@wfyi.org, or connecting via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about the Indiana Authors Awards, really the best in books here in the state of Indiana. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. My guests today with me in the studio are Laura Wills with the Indianapolis Public Library Foundation. Laura, welcome to the program.
Hi, John.
Welcome back, I guess I should say. This is your second time.
That's right.
Visit. Flory Benford Kichler, who is also with the Library Foundation, a board member, was on the awards panel and is the publisher of Patriot Press. Flory, welcome to the program.
Thanks, John. It's a pleasure to be back.
And James Madison joining us by phone, who is the Regional Author Award winner. James, welcome to the program.
Thank you, John. I'd prefer Jim, if you don't mind.
Jim, I can do. Jim would work. And I probably ought to clarify, I need to do a couple of disclosures, but you are not the James Madison who helped write the Constitution. You're not quite that old.
He was only 5'2", but a lot smarter than I am.
But I probably ought to say, just so we're not withholding anything from the audience, that I have some association with the Indiana Authors Award. I was on the panel of judges for the 3 years prior to this one until I cycled off, and continue to be a supporter of the awards competition because I think it's a great endeavor. And then the other thing is that Flory and I are friends of long standing. Her daughter, in fact, was my kid's first babysitter. So, well, I'm going to start now. Laura, just by asking, could you talk a little bit about what the awards competition is so that people have an idea what it is we're talking about?
Sure. The Indiana Authors Award is a statewide program that seeks to recognize the best of Indiana authors. So it starts with a public nomination process in February and March of each year. So we get nominations from all across the state. And after we receive those nominations, our award panel goes to work. This year we have an eight-member award panel. They go through all the nominations and then read about 80 to 100 hours of reading of the selected authors. And then they narrow it down to our winners and finalists, and we'll be celebrating those, the winner in the national and regional award category, and then three emerging author finalists at the award dinner this Saturday.
And is it possible, if people want to go to the dinner, is it still possible for them to?
We do have a few tickets remaining. They can go to IndianaAuthorsAward.org for information.
And they can order their tickets.
Correct.
There. Probably ought to say, I've mentioned the fact that the Jim is the regional award winner. Could you, the national award winner is
Michael Martone, and then our three emerging author finalists are Tricia Fields, Mike Mullen, and Kelsey Timmerman, and the emerging author winner will be announced at the award dinner on Saturday.
How old is the competition?
This is its fifth year, and it began with funds from a grant from the Glick Fund, a fund of Central Indiana Community Foundation. So with their generosity, all proceeds from the event go back to programs of the library and Library Foundation. So it's a really, really neat program.
Flory, you've been through, this is your second year as one of the panel of judges. What was that process like?
It was really probably one of the most challenging things that I have ever done. And I can say that, and it's a wonderful thing to be able to say, because the quality of the writing and the authors in our state is just phenomenal. And I'm just not sure that everybody realizes that. And it was honestly a surprise to me, and I am in the book industry for a lot of years. But it was incredible. A lot of reading. But oh my goodness, the depth and breadth of talent in the state is really incredible.
Jim, what does being named the regional author, regional authors award winner, mean to you? Mean to your career at this stage?
Well, John, it's just a delight. I can only think of the sort of trite things that one says in this circumstance, but for me personally, they're absolutely true. I am deeply honored, and I don't have to do a whole lot on Saturday at the awards dinner or the events that precede that, and Laura probably wants to talk about that, but I'm actually a bit nervous about it because of what it all means.
What are you nervous about? What part of that?
You know, people say nice things to me, and we Hoosiers are very modest people, so we don't know how to deal with that.
Well, is some of it, I would think, having talked to more than a few writers over the years, too, is that, you know, your relationship with your audience is a little bit disconnected in that you write, they read, but, you know, except in relatively rare circumstances, you tend not to come face-to-face with them.
Well, that's really very true.
And
anyone who writes knows. I'm sure Michael Martone would say this if he were here. You spend a lot of time just sitting in front of your computer screen and no one around. In fact, most of us don't want any people around. But those occasions when you do have time face-to-face with an author are really precious. I think it's one of the two things about writing that gives me the greatest pleasure, and that is to have a chance to talk to readers and even occasionally to hear them disagree with something I've written. I actually value that very much.
What things have they disagreed with that you've written? I mean, I would think, you know, you wrote a book about lynching. Does anybody come up to you and say, I'm in favor of lynching?
That was the most contentious and difficult book I've written. No, I don't know. Every book I'm working on is the most difficult one at that moment. But that book on lynching, focusing on the lynching in Marion, Indiana in 1930, stirred up a few small hornet's nests. And I received emails and personal comments from a variety of sources.
What sort of things did they say?
Well, I think the first thing they say, the most common thing that people tend to say about that subject is that it's history, it's past. You really shouldn't write about it. What you're doing is digging up old wounds. You're opening up scars. Let them heal by not talking about it. And I thought about that a long time before I began working on that book, and I disagree with that. I respect others' opinion on that, but I don't think we heal by ignoring. I think we only heal by really facing the truth and facing our history. And our history includes some very, very good stories and some very, very not-so-good stories. We've got to get them all in to have a history that is capable of serious engagement by adults rather than a comfort history that just makes us feel good. I don't write comfort history to make us feel good for adults.
We are talking about books and the Indiana Authors Awards here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Flory, could you talk a little bit about, you know, what you look for as one of the judges, what the panel looked for in terms of determining who these winners were going to be? Because you've said there were a lot of great writers. It's probably a little frustrating to have to narrow that list down to five, but what separates people?
It was tremendously difficult, I have to say. But what made it a little easier is what people may not know about being a book award judge, and especially this for the Indiana Authors Award, is it's not just a matter of, oh, gee, I like that, or, oh, I didn't like that. There are at least six or seven criteria that fill up three or four pages of what we need to look for and how to judge innovation, creativity, writing style, and it's very, very difficult. I found myself, as I was reading, I had to constantly have my criteria in front of me to consult, because we really take this extremely seriously, and it's very time-consuming, but that's the way it needs to be, because then at the end of the day and at the end of the 100-some hours of reading, we're confident that we actually have the best absolute choice that we can possibly make.
And the process starts sometime in January, right?
Still? It does.
And you complete judging when?
We are finished by, I want to say, May?
June is when the final decision's made, yeah.
And how many books in that time from January to June did you have to work through?
Personally, I think everybody sort of, we make sure that we have a representative selection from each author, but it's between 80 and 100 books and sometimes more. Mm-hmm. It just depends. As I said, the judging panel, we take this very seriously and we do whatever it takes to make sure we're making the best choice.
And Laura, what's the breakdown? You know, how do you determine who is a national award contender, who is a regional award contender, who is an emerging contender?
Sure. Well, part of that is the nomination process. When folks across the state nominate an author, they tell us what category they think the author should be in. But really, we leave it up to our panel. We have different criteria for each category. You know, a national author is someone whose work is well-known across the nation. A regional author is well-known across the state. So we leave it to our panel to kind of discuss their work and see what category they feel their work fits best.
And the emerging author then is?
Someone that's published no more than 2 books within the past 10 years. So someone that's kind of at the start of their career.
Beginning career, and it's not so much an age classification. If you've got a 70-year-old who's just published the first book, that adds to it. Now, Florian, in terms of, we've gotten a listener question. If you're judging one of these books, you know, do you do a kind of triage that if you've read the first 30 pages and thought, you know, this really isn't ringing the bell for me. Do you put it aside just to get on to something else, or do you read the whole thing even if you're convinced it doesn't have a chance of being a contender?
I would have to say that most of the panelists will read most of the book. I personally felt like I needed to read most of the book. I won't say the whole book in the interest of full disclosure, because most of the time, if you can get halfway to two-thirds through, I feel like I've got a pretty good sense of what the book is about. But the problem is, and what I really was such a challenge for me, is that everything I read, I loved, and I wanted to read it all. so that, again, it all depends on the judging panelists are very, very careful to make sure that we read the book so we know what we're dealing with, because it's very important.
We are talking about Indiana Books, Indiana Authors, in honor of the upcoming Indiana Authors Awards Dinner this Saturday. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Laura, how many people, I mean, in terms of the number of authors who are under consideration, how many got set in, were nominated, were they self-nominated? How many people were we looking at in the state?
This year we had probably more than 100 authors who were nominated. Some were self-nominated, some were nominated by their publisher, friends, family, fans, librarians, kind of it runs across the gamut. We also had a new rule instituted last year where nominations are good for 5 years, so the panel has the option to look back over nominations that were given in 2011 or 2010 as well, just to make sure that we're really focusing on the best of Indiana authors. So it makes more work for our panel, but we feel like we're getting the best of Indiana.
Now, do you get campaigns where, you know, people will submit nominations for one writer, almost like a lobbying effort? Where
we do see some of that, where we will, you know, get 12 nominations in a row for the same person, but the number of nominations isn't as important. It doesn't really factor into the award panel's decision at all. It's really all about the quality of work. So we encourage, you know, plenty of nominations, but at the end of the day, it's just the author's work that matters.
So, Flory, do you even know the number of nominations somebody's got, or just know if they're as part of the pool?
No, we pretty much know that their name is part of the pool. No, we don't really know how many nominations, because we pretty much look at everything. So we don't want anybody to think that their nomination doesn't count, because of course it does.
Are there any Indiana authors who are disqualified from consideration? I know, and I should say in full disclosure, I know, for example, there was an intense debate about, you know, the whole idea of self-publishing and all of that, and then an equally intense debate about what actually self-publishing consists of, what the definition should be. But
right. Well, they have to be living. That's one criteria. They have to either be born in Indiana or have lived in the state for a period of 5 years. And starting in 2014, self-published authors will be eligible. So that'll be the first year.
So you could have an entire new flood next
year.
That's
correct.
We are talking about the Indiana Authors Awards competition here on No Limits. My guests are Jim Madison, who is an Indiana author, Laura Wills with the Indianapolis Public Library Foundation, Flory Binford Kitchler, publisher of Patriot Press, and one of the judges. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about the best in Indiana books and writers here on No Limits in honor of the upcoming Indiana Authors Awards dinner. My guests are Jim Madison, who is an Indiana author, the Regional Authors Award winner, Laura Wills, the Indianapolis Public Library Foundation, Flory Binford Kitchler, also of the Library Foundation, one of the judges, and the publisher of Patriot Press. Jim, I'd asked you earlier what the award meant to you personally. I guess I'd like to broaden that a little bit. You know, in terms of the writers working in Indiana, what does the idea of this competition mean for them? Is it a stimulus? Is it a distraction? What does it mean to writers who are, as you say, sitting in front of their computer screens and trying to think of the next sentence?
And I'm sure it's good for the book business. There's so many things to say about books and writers, John. But I want to answer your question first by mentioning libraries. I think all of us who write spent time in libraries, most of us as kids, I certainly did, a small public library which had a shelf full of books. Children's books, kids' books, a little bit like the books that Flory's firm publishes. And I read those books, and I loved those books. And I became a reader. And from reader to writer, I think, is a necessary step. And most of us depended and still depend on public libraries. I just taught myself, I'm very proud of this, how to borrow a book electronically from my local library here in Bloomington. So I want to start with libraries as connected to readers and writers.
And I want to talk a little bit, in terms of your work, the work that has won this distinction, it's a fairly eclectic list. I mean, we've got a biography of Eli Lilly, a book, you know, A Lynching in the Heartland, as we referenced earlier, the book about the last lynching north of the Mason-Dixon line, couple of books that deal with World War II, and then The Indiana Way, a state history, and then another book that's going to be coming out next year called Hoosiers, a history of Indiana. Where does the genesis for your books, where did the idea come from?
Well, you might say I have no discipline and no focus, but there is a connection to all of those books in one way or another, and that is Indiana. They're all about Indiana subjects, sometimes at the core and the center, sometimes less so. And I have this strange affection for Indiana, this strange interest in Indiana. And I guess, like all writers, I have some curiosity, and my curiosity takes me to places where I hadn't intended to go. So I can't say that I had a life plan when I was 25 years old and that I sat down and decided to write books on all of these subjects. I never did. I'm not sure what my next book's going to be. It'll probably have some connection to Indiana.
What provokes your interest in Indiana? I mean, I don't mean that as in a pejorative sense.
Again, it wasn't thought out. It was because I had a job when I was in graduate school at Indiana University that required me to be in Bloomington. And I thought, well, how can I be a historian and go off to an archive in Paris, which might have been a lot more fun. But I went off to the Indiana State Library, to the Indiana State Archives, the Indiana Historical Society, and there I found the sources I needed to write my first book. And I got stuck. I was like Brer Rabbit. I just couldn't get away from it. And you develop a certain knowledge and a certain expertise, and that helps you to see the subjects and see the topics. I guess the other thing is, John, that I care about the present. I care very much about Indiana. In this new book I have coming out next year, which is a history of the state from the Ice Age to the present, I write in the introduction that I yield to no one in my Hoosier patriotism. But the book also has a great deal to say about Indiana that's not so good and not so friendly, and that some people will probably not like very much.
Which areas are we talking about, or periods of Indiana history? I think the 20s when the Klan dominated state government.
The whole chapter on the Ku Klux Klan, which was the nadir, the bottom, I think, in Indiana's 200 years of history, nearly 200 years of history. Reminds you all that we're moving toward our bicentennial in 2016. I think the part of the new book, which is the title simply is Hoosiers, that is most different from the history I wrote 30 years ago is that there is much, much more in this new book about African Americans and about race, because we know so much more than we did 30 years ago because of the scholarship of dozens and dozens of historians and others. And so I've written a lot about African Americans and a bit more about Hispanics, a lot more about women, people not necessarily in the majority or in the mainstream, and using them not only to tell their stories, but to use them to reflect on the general tendencies and traditions in Indiana.
Are there, you mentioned that with the book 30 years ago, this is different. You've got a different kind of emphasis now, or different emphases. Are there parts of your earlier work that you at times wish you could revisit?
Of course. One of the things I always tell younger writers is once it's published, don't read your own stuff. It's really painful, and as time goes by, it gets more painful. I stand by what I've written, and at the same time, there are certainly factual inaccuracies in print that embarrass me, but there are also things I didn't know at the time. I was either too young or too inexperienced, or we didn't have the scholarship that we have now. One of the things, scholarship is nothing more than new knowledge, and scholars create new knowledge about everything, including the past. And so even traditional subjects like William Henry Harrison, our first territorial governor, has attracted wonderful new scholarship. It's one of the surprises I had in doing the research for this book, how much more we know about William Henry Harrison, and it's quite fascinating.
We are talking about the best in Indiana books here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Laura, we've gotten a listener question that asks how you arrive at the categories national, regional, emerging. Why those three, and perhaps not like a young adult or a children's book category or anything like that?
Well, when the award was first created in 2009, there was an advisory panel that kind of decided how this was all going to work. And there aren't a lot of book awards across the nation from which we could draw experience. So the advisory panel had several meetings over the course of a year and just sat down and tried to figure out the best way. So there certainly could be other ways, you know, fiction versus nonfiction, young adult. But to us, this seemed like the best way to honor three authors who are at different stages possibly in their life and career, but really give a good sense of what Indiana authors have to offer the public.
And Flory, I'm going to call on you in yet another one of your capacities. You were president of the Independent Book Publishers Association. Listener wanted to know good definition of what self-publishing is. I know I've opened a can of worms, but
that's a tough one, because one of the things that the entire book industry is struggling with is what is the definition, because there are companies who help authors self-publish, and then there is the option of an author just simply taking matters into his or her own hands and doing it all by him or herself.
Which is something I think Stephen King was looking at doing, right? And figuring,
Exactly.
You know, I already have a built-in audience. Why do I really need a publisher anymore? I'll just put this thing out here myself, and I get all the money then, and I don't have to share it with anyone.
Well, and the advice, too, that I always give to aspiring authors and or authors who are thinking about publishing is I always ask them to think very hard about how they want to spend their time. Because if you're an author, then you're an author because you love to write. If you're a publisher, you have to be a business person. And so if you have the time to be both, that's great. But many, many authors find themselves frustrated because they don't have the time to write because they're too busy dealing with the business of publishing.
And then the other thing I want to ask, we were talking about, since you were in the room while decisions were being made, who was going to be the winners in the national and regional, and the winner in the emerging category has been determined. You're just not going to share that name until Saturday night at the dinner. What qualities elevated Jim's work, for example, from the others?
Should I hang up, John?
No. You can let your ears burn just a little bit here for a moment.
You know, I have to say, and it's a perfect, that's a great question, because Jim's already said it himself, and so I can second it, but it's diversity. And that is kind of the watchword of the entire Indiana Authors Award program. It's diversity in the kinds of panelists we have from all parts of the state and all parts of the book industry. We have booksellers, we have librarians, we have publishers, we have teachers. And that's what makes our state strong, is that diversity. And so we are very, very proud of our winners this year, and certainly congratulate Jim and Michael and whichever one of the three emerging it is. If I told you, I'd have to kill you.
Yeah. Well, there'd be a lot of witnesses since we're on the radio. But Jim, you know, a large part, and I guess I'm going to step out of my role purely as impartial interviewer here, because I have been part of the process before, and I know one of the discussions, at least when I was on the panel, was really about how we deal with the whole issue of the changes in the publishing and the book buying and the relationships between writers and authors, writers and their audiences. Jim, could you talk a little bit about the changes that you've seen in terms of the book business and you know, the work of being a writer in the time that you have been doing it?
Yeah. Well, I've been doing it for 40 plus years, so I have seen tremendous changes. And they're a bit symbolic of the changes in our larger society. The last two chapters of this new book I have coming out is about that very subject, and I find it fascinating how things have changed. We started probably, most of us, with technology, and I can tell you that I wrote my first book on a manual portable typewriter. I still have the long legal pads, line pads, that I wrote it out in hand and then typed it myself on a typewriter. Well, I don't know where to start to use a typewriter today. All the way to the materials that are available in digital format, images from libraries, and on and on and on. So the technology has changed dramatically for authors and, of course, for publishers as well. And all of us who care about books are a little uncertain about the future and maybe a little anxious about the future. But I think I'm an optimist on this. I think we still have good books, and I'm hopeful that we're going to continue to have good books, that the changes in technology are going to not drive away good readers and good books.
What is the are the satisfactions in terms of writing the same for you now as they were 40 years ago, or?
Actually, I think they are. I think I get greater satisfaction. I said there are two things earlier that authors like, at least that I want, and that is I want readers, and occasionally I want engagement with those readers. And secondly, I just want the chance to sit in front of my computer and try to put words on that screen. There are days when it frustrates the hell out of you, and you just can hardly go on because it's still hard work for me. But there are more times when you have the satisfaction of writing something you think is pretty good, not perfect, because then, as Hemingway and all others have said, you've got to throw it away if you think it's really perfect. But the pleasure of writing something that you think is going to communicate from your head through your fingertips to some reader is, for me, me one of life's great, great pleasures. And I think now that I have more experience, maybe a little more confidence about it, I get even more pleasure from trying to do that.
What tells you that it's pretty good? I mean, what is the standard? Well, I think that's an important question, particularly as someone who tries to teach writing to young people.
Yeah, that's a really hard one, John. I don't trust my first instinct. That is, in particular, I always have to wait a day or two or sometimes a month or to read it and say, well, that's pretty good, or at least it's good enough. And often I go back and say, well, that wasn't really as good as I thought it was, and that's the process of revising. And all writers spend as much time revising as they do writing.
We are talking about the best in Indiana books here on No Limits in honor of the upcoming Indiana Authors Awards dinner on Saturday evening. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Laura, I want to talk a little bit about the change. What prompted the change to say that starting next year, self-published authors are going to be eligible for consideration? Is that just an acknowledgement of the fact that we are in this changing world of writers and audiences?
I think so. It's based on feedback we've gotten over the past couple of years. You know, when the award started in 2009, self-publishing was not nearly the force that it is now. So I think it's just the award growing and changing through the years. And we always want to be responsive to the public and their feedback. So the award panel debated it this year and, you know, took a hard look at what that would mean for the award and had a great discussion about it. And then, you know, we decided to make this change.
Oh, I'm going to key in on something Laura said there. I mean, the fact is, she talked about how much things have changed since the competition started way back in 2009. it gets to the pace of change that we're talking about now, Flory. I mean, what future changes are we likely to see in this evolution of or revolution in terms of relationship between writers and audiences?
I think that the relationship between the author and the readers is going to continue to become more direct. I think social media has enabled that to happen. And I also, if I could just say a word about the decision to have self-published books come into the competition. The panel's real concern was that we would be missing something if we did not do this. And that was, I think, the overriding concern.
Yeah,
we
Walt
didn't
Whitman's
want to
limit Leaves of Grass was self-published.
Exactly.
Yeah, but...
And we didn't want to limit ourselves, and we didn't want to miss something that could be absolutely fantastic. So I, as a panelist, I'm very, very excited about the decision.
And in terms of these changes, I mean, how... What effect is that having on the libraries that the Jim says is sort of the core, the starting place for a lot of writers? I mean, I'm assuming you guys are caught in this vortex as well, Laura.
Yeah, I think libraries are having to change and evolve quickly, just as everyone else is. I know the Indianapolis Public Library is hosting workshops and having... You know, at the Indie Author Fair this weekend, we're hosting workshops on self-publishing, and because it is important to our patrons, so we're just trying to change and evolve with everyone else.
In terms of the change in the relationship, before we went on the air, Laura, you and I were talking about last year when we did this show and we had John Green on, who, you know, just posted that he was going to be on Twitter, and suddenly we're getting phone calls from Jerusalem and other places we never heard of. That's not something that most authors would have thought would be part of their job description in the past. We're going to pick that point up on the other side. Right now, we are talking about the best in Indiana books here on No Limits. My guests are Jim Madison, the Regional Author Award winner, Laura Wills, the Indianapolis Public Library Foundation, and Flory Binford Kichler, who was one of the judges. I am John Krall. You are listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about the Indiana Authors Awards in honor of the dinner coming up this Saturday evening. My guests are Jim Madison, who is the Regional Author Award winner, Laura Wills, the Indianapolis Public Library Foundation, and Florrie Benford Kichler, who is also with the Library Foundation, was one of the judges and is the publisher of Patria Press. Just before we went to the break, we were talking about John Green's appearance last year and the Twitter explosion that he produced, which is a kind of a revolution in the relationship that writers have with their audiences. Jim, is that the kind of relationship you would like to have with your audience? I mean, to some degree...
I'm really envious.
Well, although I got to say, watching it, I thought this could become a bit oppressive, too. That you know, it's a little bit, you begin thinking you're maybe a couple of steps away from, you know, Elvis and Michael Jackson here.
It's hard for me to feel sympathy for John Green, but I respect his he's a phenomenal writer and has had a real effect. I'm delighted. I don't get so many, but I'm delighted to have responses from authors. Let me just tell you one case. I wrote a book about an Indiana woman who served with the Red Cross in World War II and was killed in the war and is buried at Normandy, the American Cemetery in Normandy, France, one of four women buried among 9,000-plus guys. And I enjoyed writing that book. It's called Slinging Donuts for the Boys. And I have heard from dozens and dozens of readers of that book. In fact, I've received photographs from at least a dozen, maybe two dozen, readers who went to Normandy and found Liz Richardson's grave and took a picture of her, of the visitors standing next to her grave marker and sent it to me. All of this is possible, of course, because of email and the new communications. But it's wonderful to have readers engaged in that way.
What which of your books has produced the greatest response? That the one that readers seem to connect with, and more to the point, I guess, would say, feel a need to connect with the writer of the book, you know, which is a somewhat different thing.
Yeah, I'd like to say all of them, but I guess just because it's sold the most copies, The Indiana Way, the general history of the state that I published, wrote more than 30 years ago, because it has sold a lot of copies. It's been used in college classrooms and had a lot of adult readers and uses. So I hear from people, I still hear from people who tell me something about that book or ask some question about that book. That's the book that's had probably the biggest or widest impact. The other books are more focused, and I think maybe they get a more intense impact sometimes from readers. We mentioned earlier the lynching book or the Liz Richardson book about the World War II woman. Those are more focused, and they might produce a more intense reaction sometimes. But I've never had too many of them. That is, reactions from readers.
If we were going to have, we've got readers listening right now. If someone were going to start with your work, which book would you recommend that they start with?
I guess I'd say the lynching book. But it depends on interest. I mean, I still have people who've read the Eli Lilly biography recently. And want to talk to me about Eli Lilly. One of the greatest honors for me is, in addition to being a Glick Author Award winner, is that my books are still in print, and I'm really grateful for that. So you can still buy them. And that means that I have younger readers or readers who didn't see them when they came out who read a book that I wrote 20 or 30 years ago.
We are talking about the best in Indiana books. My guests are Jim Madison, Laura Wills, and Florrie Benford Kichler. If you would like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Molly, welcome to the program.
Well, hi, and I'm a big fan of Jim Madison, and A Lynching in the Heartland, I had to read straight through. It pretty much freaked me out, but thank you. But my question is this. Sometimes I see advertisements for classes where one is teaching creative writing. And I always wonder, how do you teach creative writing either to young people or to adults? I mean, to me, writing is just sort of kind of a goofy thing that goes on in your head, and it somehow transforms onto the computer. So I just wanted to hear comments about how does one teach creative writing?
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Molly. Well, Jim is the author on the panel here. I guess I'll throw that question to you first.
Well, I'm also a teacher, and I taught writing intensive seminars for decades, and was presumably teaching writing, not creative writing, but writing. And I never figured it out. it's either too simple or too complex. It does, as we said earlier, I think good writers need to be good readers. They need to be curious. But there are skills, and there are the standard skills of grammar, for example, and sentence structure and paragraph structure, in the business of history at least, of having a thesis, an argument that you want to make. Those kinds of things, the more technical things, you can help students learn in a classroom environment. Some of the other things that are essential, I'm not sure how you teach or how students learn them.
Well, Flory, as someone who obviously is a publisher, deals with writers on a fairly regular basis, I mean, what are the things you look for in a piece of writing?
I think there's a common myth that creative writing is just all, it just sort of flows out of your head and it gets on the page and it's wonderful. But actually, Jim's point, I would have to agree with, that no matter what kind of writing you're doing, there needs to be a structure, there needs to be grammar, it needs to have a beginning and a middle and an end. And that sounds obvious, but believe me, it's not always. So that would be what I would say, is that there is a structure, and even those who write mystery thrillers, you know, any kind of fiction like that, they have plot points, and they plan it all out before they ever put a word to paper.
Well, and I guess I'll do a plug for, I think, one of my favorite books on writing, and one of the most useful things. Elmore Leonard, the late mystery writer, started out as a New York Times piece, and now is a fairly inexpensive book that has just 10 rules for writing. And if you follow those, you inevitably will become a better writer. Won't necessarily mean you become a great writer, but you will become a better writer if you just follow those. In terms of where things are going, I mean, how is things that the whole sort of John Green thing we were talking about with the Twitter explosion, how has that forced changes in the competition, Laura? I mean, do people now look for writers who can engage large-scale audiences?
I don't know if we look for large-scale audiences, but I think that sharing the message of writing among Indiana is definitely important to the award panel. We often look at, writers who are also professors or teachers who share the message of writing. I guess part of the Indiana Authors Award mission is to share a love of reading and writing throughout the state. So when the award panel looks at these authors' work, they're also looking at what else they're doing besides just their books of furthering this mission throughout the state.
And we focused an awful lot on Jim's work, obviously, because he's on the program here. But Flory, I ought to give you a chance to talk about what it was in Michael Martone's work that elevated him, why he is the national award winner this year.
Michael is amazing, and his body of work is just so incredible and prolific. I mean, how could you not like somebody who has a book entitled Fort Wayne is Seventh on Hitler's List? So he was absolutely just stood out, just both his body of work and the quality of his writing. So as did Jim.
I can jump in here and agree with that, because I did read Fort Wayne is Seventh on Hitler's List when it came out many years ago, and much of Michael's other work, and I have great respect for his writing.
Which of Michael's books, because he is a writer's writer and a very literary writer, So not quite at the John Green household name level. Which of his books do you think is the most overlooked? I have one in mind that, but...
That's a hard one. I think actually his self-titled Michael Martone is probably overlooked a bit, because I think that might kind of people go, why would the title be the same as the author's name?
And
it's quite unusual and quite creative. It's amazing.
And how about we also ought to give some attention and give them a chance. The emerging authors, what elevated these three?
Well, I have to say they are all just tremendous, and in very different ways. I mean, we have Tricia Fields who writes a mystery series, and then we have Mike Mullen who writes for young adults, and then we have Kelsey Timmerman who is nonfiction. And they're all very different, but, you know, what they share is an originality and a creativity and an innovation that absolutely caused them to rise to the top.
Was there an author when you were reading all of these, and it doesn't have to be one, whose work you had not encountered before and now you're a fan? Flory.
Well, it's hard because, Jim, I absolutely love your work. So forgive me here, but I had read some of your other books. But for somebody who I had never read before, and John Green, I honestly have to say I had never even heard of him. That was not a genre. Young adult is not a genre that I read at all. And when I read his book, I was absolutely blown away.
We are talking about the Indiana Authors Awards here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. David, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. Wonderful, wonderful autumn day.
Thanks.
How's everybody there?
We are doing fine. What's on your mind, David?
Well, a couple of things. One, if you'd repeat the name of that book that you said, if you follow those 10 things, you might not be a great writer, but you'll be a better writer.
Elmore Leonard, who is a fabulous mystery writer, wrote, among other things,
Stick,
and the one with John Travolta, Get Shorty, which was also an absolutely fabulous takedown of Dustin Hoffman. But... Elmore Leonard's 10 Rules of Writing, or 10 Simple Rules for Writing, something like that. It's a very short, I mean, let me put it this way. If it takes you more than 30 seconds to read each of the pages, it's because you are saying the words aloud very slowly. It's a very quick read.
10 Simple Rules for Writing?
Yes.
To that effect?
Yes, that's it.
And do we know the author of that, or?
Elmore Leonard.
Okay, a little distortion there again.
Elmore. Leonard is the last name. Elmore is the first name.
Elmore, okay. And the other, I've been encouraged to write books and heard about self-publishing, so where would I go to get started on that? I don't have a computer, but what would be some suggestions there?
Thanks very much for the call. We'll try to get an answer to your question, David. Well, Flory, I think, is the publisher here. You would be the best start there.
Well, I'll tell you, the first place you need to go is, of course, your library. There are a lot of really good books on self-publishing. And what I would suggest you do is look that up and go and start looking at those books and get a feel for what all's involved. Before you do anything, before you plunk out one dime, before you even start writing, it's always a great idea to go there and get yourself educated on what all is involved in self-publishing.
Laura.
And David, we have free public programs at Central Library this Saturday. We have programs on one called Get Started, if you want to just learn how to pick up the pen and start writing, and also free workshops on self-publishing. The Indiana Writer Center has presenters there, so they can answer probably a lot of your questions.
How is that whole phenomenon, or new development of self-publishing? I mean, It used to be that a self-published book was pretty much something you just gave to your friends. But now, obviously, there are cases where a self-published book becomes, you know, a big seller. Do we have figures on how many books now are published in the traditional model or method as opposed to those that are self-published? How has the balance shifted? And as I think both of you have pointed out, the lines demarcating those two is a little difficult. So is there a category that's sort of in between the hybrids, as it were? Flory, I'll start with you.
I don't have exact figures on the tip of my tongue, but let's just say self-publishing in the last 3 or 4 years has exploded. And I'll just say exploded, and we'll leave it at that. But in terms of, it's interesting because the fact that anybody can publish a book, but not everybody should. And what that means is that it's very easy to get a book into print, but staying in print is a lot harder. The quality of writing and how you market your work, I think, are two things that cause the cream to rise to the top.
Laura, how does the library deal with that whole phenomenon, too? Because people don't just give you the books, generally.
Right.
You guys have to purchase them.
We do have a whole collections department. That's their entire job. And I know we do have plenty of self-published books in our library collection, so they have, you know, strict criteria that they use to select those books. So.
And what is the standard? I mean, do you have...
I'm
presuming it's not just, oh, I wrote a book and here,
right.
Please give me some money for it.
Right. Yeah. They base it on reviews and what is necessary for the collection, what people will read and check out and that kind of thing. So,
and we probably should, since people have been listening here, about the dinner. Information, if you could give the information once again on how people, it's not just the dinner, but all Saturday you've got events going on connected with the awards and with a celebration, really, of Indiana books and writers. Can you talk about where people could find the information they might want?
Yeah, all the information is at IndianaAuthorsAward.org. That's information about the Indie Author Fair, the free public programs taking part on Saturday, and also about the award dinner taking place that night.
That's great. Well, I think that will have to be the last word. I would like to thank all of you. Jim Madison, thank you very much for joining us today. And congratulations on your honor. It's much deserved.
Thank you.
Laura, thank you for joining us. It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Thanks, John.
And Flory, as always, it's a pleasure having you here. Thanks very much.
Thanks, John.
That has been No Limits. We'd like to thank you for joining us. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thanks for joining us.